There's no benefit. The outlay of time and energy. Like, I don't get an economic redress for that time and effort. You know, it's a terrible thing. It's a waste of time. Really. I'm volunteering. Right? So I'm curious about your relationship to writing in terms of its economical relations, like the understanding of it as its costs and benefits.
Well, occasionally I agonize about that to my husband, and he said, "Look, don't worry about that. It's a leisure activity."
He's also an economist.
He's an economic historian.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I suppose on a serious level, do you think there's a sort of unquantifiable cultural benefit to your creative output? You know, obviously you don't necessarily see the financial benefits of what you're doing, but is there a benefit? Do you see? I mean, can you think of your work as making another sort of economic benefit or benefit that's not?
I guess what I felt with my first three novels, actually with all of them, that in a way it's a record. So I'm so pleased to have them published because it's a record. Yeah. The first three, it's a record of Australia in the 1950s, Australia in the 1960s,
yeah.
Australia coming out of the Vietnam War, that was the period of the third book. The fourth one is about somebody coming out of domestic violence. It's about issues to do with why you, an intelligent woman, would stay in a relationship that is such a violent one for so long. So I'm really pleased to have that. That sort of value of the record is what I'm keenest on.
I'm just curious about the rational economic actor in all of these scenarios. I mean, I can see that you could say, yeah, it's a necessary function, but I'm always curious about why people become
an Well, I think
writers,
you're seeing. I think you're
better.
Seeing. I think you're
like,
seeing. I think you're seeing economics too narrowly,
right.
As prices. Economics is also about utility,
mm-hmm.
And you know, for me personally, I feel like I've had a good economics career. It's time for young people to shift in and do duties like refereeing and grant application and so on. And why shouldn't I, because I get pleasure from writing fiction, do that as well? I view myself as enormously privileged, but being an emeritus professor in economics, which is a field I love, and being able to write as well, which is something that I always wanted to do. From the time I was at school.
Satendra, and then, sorry, yeah. Go ahead, Satendra.
Oh,
sorry.
I've read about novelists who staring at a blank sheet of paper on the typewriter, and they had nothing to say, and they committed suicide. Is there any economist who has ever done that?
Probably, yes, but not one I know.
Because that's not much different between economics and fiction.
Yes. I really feel I must defend economics,
yes.
Though, because the only reason we came out of the global financial crisis of 2007-2008 was because of the quick-witted thinking of people in the Treasury. And I think too often we forget that the macroeconomists are doing a fantastic job of keeping the country's economies zinging along. Okay, we have bad periods like the one we're going through now in the US where policies are bad. We have bad periods in Australia with regard to the climate change policies and so on. But, you know, I think on average economists do a lot of good. Just think back to what it might have been after the global financial crisis, what it was with the Great Depression in the 1930s.
Go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to ask about writing gimmicks or intuition puns and raise the question of song lines. The inspiration might get from place, with your novels set in the South Coast around Wallaga Lake, Bermagui, Bega River just rang bells for me that if I were there, I'd be writing.
They rang bells for me too. the whole coast of southern coast of New South Wales and Victoria really ring bells for me. And I know that that's partly my childhood experiences, because my one grandparent were in Melbourne, the other one was in Sydney, and we would go, every 2 years we'd go up and down, and we'd go down the Hume Highway sometimes, and we'd go down the Princes Highway at other times, and then sometimes we'd stop off there, and it just resonates. It's part of who I am. And I know many Australians feel like that. You might go away and you always feel that within you. So landscape, I think, particularly when you're growing up, is such an integral part of who we are. So I haven't really answered your question. Comment.
I wanted to sort of move on to sort of why Indigenous people in Australia might think by having their song lines.
Yeah, absolutely.
As a stimulation to thinking, writing, recording, observing.
Yeah.
Keeping the mind open.
Yes, no, absolutely. But I would personally be really careful about myself articulating that, because I'm not of that culture, and I don't want to steal their stories, because I think we've already stolen enough from them. So, but I do take your point, absolutely, that's so important.
Yvonne?
So to go back to this paper, it's sort of, I find it really interesting the way it's constructed, because you've got this like huge section on the hypotheses, so we really kind of bathe our hypothesis in the introduction somewhere. So is this just like a standard format for this journal to write in these sections?
Because it's quite a long hypothesis section. There's several hypotheses.
Yeah. We probably write several papers. But is this the sort of standard format for this journal, for economic papers in general?
It varies. It varies across journals. Some experimental economics papers don't have any conjecture sections. This is my first one with Patrick, and it's got, I agree, a very extensively long section, and we don't normally have that long a section. And we've also got the discussion in there, which you might want to put into a background section or somewhere else. So that's it varies across journals.
So do you find in terms of the sections of this paper, which sections do you get more discovery from? I can't really these hypotheses. I feel that this would be somewhere where you might think of might be probably a good idea to do this, right? You might think of new ideas by writing.
And probably we wrote this back in 2009, I think it was. Probably we did get new ideas when writing it. I do find with any writing that the ideas are coming out in the writing. I'm a very visual person, I have to see what's written down. And you were talking, I think, earlier about logic. There are some people, I think the world divides, economists divide into those who can think by talking. There aren't many who can do that, and others who can think by writing. And I know rather well, too, who think by talking, and what they do is they go around and they pull out colleagues and take them off for morning tea, and then they talk them through their ideas. It's a very time-consuming process for the colleagues who are so selected. I think the writing for most economists is really important, way of clarifying what's going on.
Alison, can you just clarify then, at those seminars that you described, where you initially run a paper in a seminar, Is that a orally composed scenario, or is someone actually reading out a composed paper?
It's slides. So you would have to talk.
Data.
You're presenting everything, actually. So you present the skeleton of the paper, cutting out the blurred bits and you take people through that. So for example, here at the ANU, I always like to give the first showing here at the ANU because you get very good comments from co-authors, very good comments. And so in the, and I always advise PhD students not to put, some of them waste time by putting a roadmap of what the talk is going to be. They say, you know, in section one I'm going to do this, section two, blah, blah. It's a waste of time. You've only got an hour, so you want to move, you want to move straight to the main issues. What's the point of this? What's the value added of this? What's the, briefly, what's the relevant background? But not too much on that, because otherwise you'll spend too much time talking about other people's papers. Then move to the method, any equations that you might have, and then show, as soon as possible, the data.
And in terms of the words that you're emitting, you're extemporizing, according to those slides. Like, you're not actually reading a composed text.
Well, no. Well, some people, especially when they're starting out, read the slides. That's bad. It's bad.
Yeah,
boring.
I think we had a question, then I'll come back. Well, you had a question.
No, I think mine's been answered to some extent. I was really just going to ask Alison about the whole idea of writing as discovery, to sort of, you know, to ask how that satisfies your sense, particularly in creating economic papers. But I think you said that it's very important, the process of writing.
It's really important.
To generate the ideas,
yeah.
And that's really what I wanted to ask.
Yeah. I get the impression when you're talking about your fiction, you're much more intrigued by where it takes you than by trying to tell a story that you've already got in your head. Is that?
Yes. I mean, I've always been one of these people who think, what if? What if such and such happened? And then off you go into different tangents. So that's what I think when I'm doing fiction. What if a stranger with a daughter from a Latvian concentration, that displaced persons camp, what would happen if she arrived at a remote coastal village in southern New South Wales?
So you'd have that as your question, but you would then discover as you wrote, in a sense.
Yeah, or beforehand, before writing. So for the ending for that book, I had the ending in my head. I knew right away how it was going to end.
So I couldn't imagine you'd be very, very attracted to the idea of, say, writing a Lucky Jim about economics departments, for instance, because you know too much about them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're brilliant, those books, but I couldn't imagine doing one.
I'm just, Catherine, you had a question. You've had a question for a while.
Yeah, I just was interested in this distance that you talk about with fiction. Speaking about writing as discovery, because that's actually kind of not writing as discovery also. And I'm wondering how you think that process works, and also whether that distance is required for scholarly writing as well, or whether there's something in the nature of research that already kind of contains that distance within it.
Well, for fiction, I find when I've finished a draft of a novel, I know it off by heart. So I can't get enough critical distance away from it to be able to see it for what it is, because I'm just totally familiar with it. I need that critical distance. Whereas with the fiction, the economics work, there are people that I trust who will, including co-authors, who will, you know, you get a fair bit of feedback about it. And the feedback is, I find I don't need the critical distance for the work. And the co-authors that I work with are, we choose each other for our different strengths as well. And economics is such.
Okay.
Economics has become such a technical discipline now that you need to have people with different skills. And I prefer working with one other co-author, just because unlike in science, where you might have 5, 6, 12, it works out for us. And if you have more than two, in my experience, you have what economists call the free rider problem, where the third one person, could be anyone, it's not
contributing.
Milt.
Yeah. So one of the things I was interested in the manuscript is obviously to do the study, you need to have a detailed written protocol beforehand that went through ethics committee or whatever. And I was wondering how many of these conjectures, these hypotheses, you had you actually did on the first draft versus how many came out from the process of writing out this protocol?
No, unfortunately I can't remember, but I could remember from more recent ones that that doing the ethics application does clarify the mind and make you think of additional conjectures that you might want to put in. So I think it's very good discipline.
I'm sort of recently, we have a couple of cultural situations in biology where now, rather than sort of being male dominated or 50-50, we have sort of 80 to 90% female, 10 to 20% male. One would be the modern biomedical research lab, which is heavily dominated by young women usually, in my experience at least. And the other one is vet schools, where
it's women.
Where, you know, vet schools, I trained as a vet, it was pretty much all men, males who had the social skills of beer swilling warthogs, quite frankly. But now it's all rather elegant young women, and there are a few guys. And I just wonder how that, if you traded in your numbers of boys and girls, how it actually would change.
Yes.
That's the classic thinking like a scientist, you know, what's the next experiment?
Well, you know what? I was hoping that the physics department might run something like this experiment, because I think that would be very interesting to see in the STEM fields, and also in literature, for example.
Where it's mostly women.
Yeah, and how's that affecting the men?
Was there ever a stage that literature would have been mostly men?
Well, there would have been in the 19th century.
Yes.
19th century.
Yeah.
Before the 18th.
Go ahead.
I want to pick up on that and actually ask a question about the nature of literature and reading. There was in Sydney last week, there was a conference on the nature of reading, in which was expressed the idea, and I don't know whether this comes from feminist theory or where it comes from, but it was expressed that there is a distinction between male and female readers. And of course, I'm interested in this as a writer. I mean, whether this is fact or not, I'm just trying to explore this. Male readers apparently read less fiction because they prefer to read about conflict, whereas female readers prefer to read about association than relationship. I've never heard this before, and I don't know where it springs from.
I can't really, but I did think the sort of fiction that I read and write is all about conflict.
Yeah.
Yes.
You can't have a novel really without conflict.
Seems very strange.
Bahanga, sorry.
This is somewhat of a peripheral question discussion. Partly to do with the process of being a writer. See, sometimes there's a feeling that as you write, you carry this gargoyle image of the reader in your mind. So as a writer who has been in the trade for a while, has this impression changed from the beginning to where you are now? Or differently worded, how do you kind of negotiate with that imaginative reader you carry in your head? Has the negotiation kind of become positive with time? Or how do you position it in the process?
Well, I may not be typical, but I always feel that there's a veil, it's a rather wonderful veil of ignorance between me and the reader. And without that, I mean, that's very liberating if you've got this veil of ignorance, because you don't have to write to please someone. And I have read writing advice columns that say that you should have in mind what your readership is. And I don't have in mind what my readership is. There's this veil of ignorance.
But probably for economics, you do have in mind a readership.
Oh, yes.
Whereas for fiction,
absolutely,
maybe that's one of the aspects of fiction that is liberating, is that idea that... Danielle, this is the last, I think it's the last question.
I was wondering about, because with the creative writing, you still have to go through the editors and has your experience of dealing with the peer review process that mainly it's adversarial in a lot of ways, help you with dealing with the editors in the creative writing?
Yes, I think it has, because the economics dealing with the criticisms makes you develop a thick skin. And that's really important. And also, I think it's taught me that I'm not always right. And that's also really important. I mean, some people may think they're never right, in which case it's quite damaging, but for me it's been really useful, because it's thickened up my skin and made me more willing to think about changing things that might not be working.
So thank you very much, Alison, for that conversation and for being able to talk to us about economics and about fiction writing. It's been really valuable for the project. So thank you.